Welcome back to a small series of shows we're doing called Rhymes with Lansing, a companion podcast project of Inspired Media, bringing you stories from where Main Street meets the Mississippi in this special mini-series being recorded live at The Works in downtown Lansing. Start planning your trip, lansingiowa.com. On our episode today, a very, very special Lansing guest, two special Lansing guests, honestly. With us, we have Mr. Rick Welsh. Welcome, Rick. Thanks for taking time out of your morning to be here.
Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. And helping me along on this episode is Mr. Andrew Boddicker.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. Executive Director of Lansing Main Streets. I appreciate you being here. We've talked on another show, but I felt like having the third voice in this show with Rick would be important for many reasons. Mostly to keep us on the rails, I think. But we'll find out.
As a teacher, that's generally my job. Rick needs writing in most of the time.
Rick, thanks for being here. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You are a hometown guy, yeah?
I am a hometown guy, yes. Born and raised in Lansing.
Absolutely. Your business is right on Main Street. It's been here for quite a while. Tell us about it.
My mother and father moved to town in 65 and started Village Farm and Home. And now it's referred to as Welsh's Village Farm and Home. Mm-hmm. They were in partnership with a gentleman from Walk On, but he wanted to protect his interest in Lansing and offered a managerial position in partnership with my father. And then the rest of that was in 65.
1965.
Yes.
What a fascinating. I love that. If people don't know what a store like yours looks like now, anyone I think in the direct area, anybody who grew up in Northeast Iowa or this region knows what a farm and home store is. But let's say you're from somewhere else. You're listening in somewhere else across the nation or the world. Tell us about what your store is. What do you have? What don't you have is maybe the right question, huh?
You know, over the years, with me being there as long as I have and my father being there as long as he was, you know, you have a close personal relationship with the customers, and you listen to their needs, and that's how you build your inventory. So you have the essentials. We have the essentials there, I think, that most people need, kind of a broad spectrum offering. You know, not a lot of frivolous stuff, but essentials of life.
Yeah. I wandered in yesterday. We're recording these shows in, you know, early spring, I'll call it, of 2024 here. It's April. A little unspring-like weather out there. So I actually wandered in yesterday to say howdy to you and picked up a great pair of mittens with some finger covers. They're really great. I love them. But in that same aisle, as I walked down to look at the glove and mitten selection, I think I looked at boots. I think I looked at fishing gear. I think I looked at some other outdoor goods. And that was just in aisle one.
Right.
I love it. It's an old-fashioned store, I'll say, in a lot of ways. If you need it, you probably have it. And if you don't have it, you know where to get it. Is that accurate?
That is very accurate, yes. You know, again, being there every day, you listen to your customers. But we get a lot of comments about people, wow, this is old school. You know, I take that as a compliment, and they mean it as a compliment. But, you know, we must be doing something right because people come through the door.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about.
Rick,
yeah.
Rick takes great pride in his customer service, and so do his employees. And I have heard story after story of the ways he reaches out to community and also to help people no matter what. My battery went dead in my car a mile away from his shop. He got in his truck, and the minute I called him, he was there to change my battery. This is what he does.
That's
not unique to me, and I know it's what he does, and that's part of the business plan, but also just the guy that Rick is, of course.
Yeah.
Because he's here for his neighbors. He'll do that for anyone he knows or doesn't know.
Well,
for sure.
Yeah, thank you. And it goes back to our parents. I mean, they help people who need help.
Yeah,
and that's what we do.
That's a big deal. It's a big deal in a community, any community.
But that's
something you find in a small town, especially I think in rural areas. I mean, you're gonna help out whoever it is that needs your help. That's a big deal. Let's go back in time just a little bit as we get going here, because Rick, you grew up obviously here in Lansing, went to school Key High, right? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I come from a large family. I'm one of 14 children.
Wow!
In the Welsh family, grew up in the heart of the 80s and played baseball for the finest program in the country.
Right. If people don't know, I mean, just give us the quick rundown on that, because it's amazing.
Yeah, Key High baseball, Coach Gene Schultz. There's nobody better. And he had a program, and it was It was a really good one, and it was one of those that you waited your turn to play, and you earned your spot. You worked hard. It was military like, but it was more than baseball. When you all get done with that, you get outside of life, and you learned a lot about life at that baseball program.
Yeah,
just how to be and how to carry yourself, and that's what Gene Schultz instilled in us.
Yeah,
I'm very proud of that.
His record stands. Is that right?
I believe so. The winningest coach.
Winningest coach
in the nation. Yes,
that's just an incredible story.
It really is. Yes,
and it had to have been a really interesting program to be a part of. I mean, that's kind of shapes a lot of part of your life, right?
It was.
I mean,
there's a lot of good memories out there of some of the stuff that he did for us, and. Now, he was a kind of an authoritative guy that if you messed up, not necessarily on the field, if you passed a car on the highway incorrectly and he saw you, you're running laps. That's just, again, it transfers into life. The man was that's just who he was. So I had a quick note. I had a riding with we had baseball practice in New Albany, which is 11 miles north, and I was riding with a gentleman, Jan Prosman was his name, and I didn't have a car, so we had to catch rides to practice, and Jan ran over a snake. It was already dead, but he ran it over, and Coach is in front of us, and Coach saw us, and he said, "Jan, you need to run a lap for running over that snake." And Jan said, "It was already dead." And he goes, "It doesn't matter." And so we had to run.
I love it. Nice. Yeah, I mean, obviously, just those kinds of experiences make a big impact in your life, right? And those also, I think, Andrew, you and I were talking the other day, when you grow up in a small town, it's a different lifestyle that I think a lot of people are actually refinding in our country. I think people realize that there are some advantages to rural areas that people like myself, I mean, I left Decorah age 18. I didn't run, but I walked quickly away, not sure that I'd ever come back. And I found it. And I'm super, super glad that I did with my wife, Erin, when we did, because it's been an incredible place to raise a kid and to be involved and get involved and be a part of a community, which is a really amazing thing. But, small towns, same way, right?
Agreed, absolutely. You don't realize it growing up, how special it is. You guy went away to college, come back, and wasn't sure what to do, that sort of thing. But what I learned over the years with being working for my father and there at the store, there's a lot of people who travel many hours every weekend to come here. And we get to live here every day of the week.
Yeah.
And that's really special. And it, with age comes wisdom, I hope. And I believe I've learned that. So.
Yeah.
We all hope. I think there's a sign down the street. I read about that earlier. Something about age being the price you pay for wisdom. Something like that.
Something like that, yes.
That's a good one. I like that. Okay. Something else I've been told, Rick, about you is that perhaps you are sort of the unofficial holder of history and or pieces of history in Lansing. Is this accurate?
Well, I've always been a history buff, and I grew up in the store with Dad. When I wasn't playing baseball, I was a kid. I was either at the store or playing baseball. But so you get to know all these people, all these customers who a 5-year-old ordinarily wouldn't know. And so over the years, I became a paper boy. I became associated with a lot of people that people my age would never have done that. So with some of them people or the historians before anybody else.
Sure.
And so I always took note. I always listened to them. The stories they had were fascinating. And so when you get older and you start seeing little pieces of memorabilia with the onset of eBay, things like that, you can find a lot of history. And part of the fun is, putting the pieces of the puzzle together.
Yeah.
Somebody asked a question about this. I don't know, but I'm curious now, too, and I want to find out. So I'll go down that and try to find whatever you can. To me, that is just fun. I wish I had more time to do it.
Sure.
But I do have a lot of memorabilia.
Yeah.
And probably so. And a lot of it is packed away. I'd like to have a place for it to display because,
oh my goodness,
that's right. the beauty of all that stuff.
What kind of pieces? Like, what are some of your favorite things that you've come across through time?
I have in my store, I have a cabinet there, and there's some in there. And so there's this bridge, Lansing Blackhawk Bridge stock certificates. I've only seen two of them in my life, and I have them both.
Let's unpack that story for a second, because part of the reason we're here this week is to tell the story of Lansing and the Black Hawk Bridge, which here in April has been closed for a little bit of time. Hopefully by the time people are listening to this, the bridge is close to being open again. Mm-hmm. A major, major project between two state DOTs, all sorts of stuff. A new bridge being built that'll be completed in, Andrew, we've talked about this, 2026, hopefully, yep. Right? But in the meanwhile, you know, a lot of transition, a lot of things happening. And as we head towards spring and summer season in Lansing, we hope people are coming down and spending time, right? But the history of the bridge is a really interesting thing, right? Can you give us that in a nutshell?
In a nutshell, yeah. It opened up June 17th of 31. I have the medallions that they sold at the time there. I have the book that they offered, original, and a copy of that.
It was a private company that built the bridge.
Yeah, right? It was a private company. It was a publicly traded company. That's how it all started. But it started in the early 1900s, the idea. And it took about 30 years to get it to come to fruition.
Wow.
And so in 31, when that opened up, it was a phenomenal, a week-long event. They had all sorts of things every day. It was operating as a toll bridge at the time, which I have a lot of the token or the coupons. There's multiple sizes and denominations, things like that.
Fascinating.
So then it was an operation, and I don't think it was doing all that well. Mm. Maybe covering their costs or whatever, but then.
Citizens of Lansing bought shares.
Oh, yes, right? Absolutely. That's the there was a heck of a campaign there. So the two stock certificates I have, one was from 1915 and one was from 1929.
Oh, wow.
So they're selling those stocks over all those years in anticipation of this bridge, not even being there yet. And people were on board with it.
Finding the money to keep building the bridge.
To keep doing it,
Do you have some images I've seen online as I've looked through? There are some really fascinating images of when it was being built.
Oh, yes.
I mean, bridge building in general is a fascinating thing, but back in those days, like, what a process.
It was a remarkable achievement for them. I mean, engineering marvel, really, when it comes down to it, how they did that both sides of the river. You know, it's not like modern-day barges scooting across there in this, but for them to pull it off was simply remarkable.
Is that how it worked? It was built from each side and met in the middle?
Yeah, they met in the middle.
Yeah. Man, that had to have been an advantage. You don't want to be the guy that screws that up.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Well, it's designed to be built that way, too, because of the weight distribution. And
sure.
The cantilever truss design,
sure.
It's very rare.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, I mean, so many cool pieces of history from that. And like Andrew and I talked about, a very iconic image that, I've spent a lot of time in Lansing over the years and even didn't realize how much that image is used in signs, from commercial signs to yard signs to decoration to,
folk art.
It's remarkable. Yeah. I mean, it's our identity. It really is. That's a huge part. It's not a total identity, but it's in people who move away, born here and raised here, move away, they have a fondness for that bridge like no other.
The sound of the bridge, and you live anywhere, you get used to the sounds, right? So we got railroad tracks near the river. You kind of get used to those if you're near them. But the sound of the steel grate and vehicles driving over it is a very specific sound. And I can only imagine living near it. You never think about it again. But, I can hear that sound. And in fact, yesterday, even though it wasn't that nice out, I walked down under the bridge and back, and I can hear that sound in my head, even though there's no vehicle on it yesterday, right? It's just kind of a very unique, tires on a steel grate sound.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Or if you've ever ridden a bike over it, which I've done a couple times, and that's
done that as well.
I don't particularly suggest it, but.
Nor does the DOT.
Yeah, I'm sure. Okay, maybe I haven't done that. Anyway. but it's a great piece of history. We are talking with Rick Welsh. Welsh is Village Farm and Home here in Lansing, many other things. Really neat pieces of history. The other thing I want to mention that a lot of people may or may not know, we don't have to spend a lot of time on it, but one of the earliest pieces of history in Lansing kind of industry, right, was the button industry, too. Do you have any neat artifacts from that world at all in your collection of things or knowledge?
I do. I have. Well, at one time, Lansing had three button factories.
Wow.
The one that prevailed was the Lansing Company that closed down 10 years ago, 12 years ago now, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But, it was a huge part of the business sector in Lansing.
And we're talking about old buttons, clamshells.
Right, clamshells.
That's the reason it was here.
And so when I was a kid, up in where we live up on Diagonal Street, underneath, a lot of times they need to get rid of the clamshells that had holes drilled in them. They cut buttons out of them, so they use them as fill in concrete sidewalks, things like that. So underneath sidewalks, I could go up there today and pull out three clamshells with holes in it right now.
That's
from where I was a kid.
Amazing. It's
still there.
I did not know that.
That's cool. I mean, it makes sense, right? I mean, they'd take to get the clamshells out of the river, yeah. They'd stamp the buttons out, and then what do you have left, right?
Yeah, and that died out when the plastics came around, synthetics came around.
Sure.
Especially during the wartime, the clamshell buttons kind of went by the wayside.
Yeah, and of course, other river towns along, up and down the Mississippi, but Muscatine was another one of those towns, huge, huge clamshell button industry there at certain points in time that kind of died out. Fascinating piece of history, though, and neat to see some of those around still.
And if people want to go see those pieces, they're at the Driftless Center right now. They got a really great display on the buttons. Yeah. Cool. And original pieces and advertisement from that factory. It is a huge part of the history of Lansing, and they do a great job out there.
I love that. I love it. Rick Welsh, we're going to come right back here in a second and talk a little bit more with you. Appreciate you taking time out of your day to be here. Andrew as well. Little show we're calling Rhymes with Lansing, and we'll be back in just a second.
Rhymes with Lansing is being made possible by the generous support of the Elmaki Clayton Electric Cooperative and Dairyland Power. For more information on Elmaki Clayton Electric Cooperative, visit acrec.com. To find out more about Lansing, Iowa, where Main Street meets the Mississippi, visit lansingiowa.com. Rhymes with is a companion project of Inspired Media. Find us online at iloveinspired.com.
Welcome back to the show. Our special guest on this episode, Mr. Rick Welsh. Rick, I was walking around yesterday. Wasn't the nicest day out, but I'll take any day to walk around downtown Lansing. It's fun for me to do that. Erin, my wife, and I, who we just heard from there, have a lot of fun memories from down here when we first met. Love coming down here. Love getting out any time of the year and tromping around. It's really amazing, though, to walk around in a town of 1,000 people. You walk around on Main Street, and Lansing still has a lot of the pieces that really matter in a small town. You know, you guys, you have your store, which is an incredible spot. I think you get just about anything you need to keep you moving throughout a day, keep everything working. But you've got other stuff. You guys still have a grocery store. You have some great little restaurants. You got a lot of the pieces right here on Main Street. What does it mean to be part of that community to you and run a business that really at this point is a real legacy business, right?
Well, I like to think it is a legacy business, but, you know, I think Lansing as a whole has a great business hub. Has everything. I mean, Lansing is a destination for that, and you can get most anything you need. An example of that is 6-7 years ago, our lumberyard closed down, and you know, if you can't get a 2x4 in Lansing, Lansing suffers. Everybody on the perimeters or even in town have to leave town to do that. Lansing as a whole suffers because of that. So with us being us, we added onto our warehouse and started selling lumber. And, you know, we're not a destination lumber yard, but
sure.
We fill that void and keep people from either coming into town, keep them from coming in to get it, or for keep them from leaving. And that was, the IGA suffers, the gas stations suffer. If somebody is on the outside or across the river, says, I can't get a 2x4, I'm just going to go to the next town.
Sure.
And that works against us. So. Yeah. That's just what we did. And you know, the idea of business being a business is to make money and survive. And so yes. I didn't do it because it was just the right thing to do. Hopefully you can make it happen and grow the business.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned earlier you were one of how many kids?
14.
Are there other siblings involved in the business?
Or just you? My oldest sister works for us. My wife and I own the store. We bought it from our parents in 2010.
Okay.
I worked there since, all through college and all this stuff, but
yeah.
In 2010. So The rest of the children are off doing their own thing.
Yeah.
They work there. The boys work there, and yeah. and the girls work there as well. And then you moved on.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have 10 sisters, so that's
it's
not a good balance there. But
we should probably be doing a whole show on growing up with 10 sisters. Yes. Holy smokes! In thinking that through as well, what does the future look like in your business? Do you have kids? Your kids that have worked in the store? Is there any interest there in lineage, or what do you think a future of a store like yours is?
Our oldest son works for us full time,
yep.
and he's my right hand man.
Awesome.
He does a fantastic job. Does he want to keep it going? I've never really had that discussion with him.
Sure.
I like to think a few good years left in me.
Yes.
But you know, you have to. You know, nothing lasts forever. So yeah. We'll probably have the discussion for too long. But
yeah. Well, it's an interesting conversation. You know, Andrew and I have talked about it. Marianne Baldwin and I talked about it, that, you know, what's interesting in our world right now is that a lot of those opportunities are starting to find, they're coming to fruition, right? Across the rural part of the country, really, but especially Iowa. And there are a lot of opportunities out there with stores that are very successful. People don't always realize in a small town, you know, it's absolutely, you can make a living running a store like yours, right?
I mean, almost certainly. It's a yeah. labor of love. There's no yes. question about that.
Yes.
You're
more than a retail store. Too right. I mean, you're a social hub. You're an outlet. People come to get something, but you're gonna have a conversation, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. No question.
Yeah,
no question. It's just one of those things that it is what you make of it. And there is no. My father always said there's no substitute for hard work,
mm-hmm.
and he was not wrong.
Yeah.
So it's what you make of it. Just like anything in life.
Yes. Speaking of that in life, so outside of the store, you and your family, what other things have kept you busy in Lansing? What other social things have you been involved in, or service organizations, right?
My wife and I are both part of the EMS.
Yeah.
And I'm a reservist on the fire department. I was a full-time fireman for 17, 18 years, I think it was. But
wow.
When business got to be where I'm spearheading that,
yeah,
I had to give up one, and I believe the EMSs were busier. It takes more commitment to do that.
Yeah.
So I kind of stepped down to reservist on the fire department.
Yeah.
But we've been doing, my wife and I have been doing EMS for approaching 30 years.
Wow. Tell me about the system that exists in Lansing, because that's another thing. Like, if people don't live in a small community, like my dad was what I call a career volunteer firefighter, right?
Sure.
He was there for as many years as he could be until he had to retire from the department at that time. And again, just an enormous social outlet. Not only are you kind of learning and building some skills and community service, but like just an incredible group to spend time with. They become your friends, right?
And right.
All sorts of things. But tell us about the EMS system in a town like Lansing. Again, 1,000 people. Closest hospital is 20 miles away?
Walk on 17 yep. miles yep. away. So, yeah.
So what does that look like in Lansing? How is it structured, or how does that work?
So we have a really good group of people, all volunteer. And, you know, there's schedulers. We have call shifts, things like that. But we're coverage ambulance-wise 24/7, 365. And it takes a big commitment for that. And not only that, but just call time, but also continuing education, things like that you have to do outside of that is becoming more and more demanding all the time. So it's not as easy as might think, but
yeah.
it's incredibly rewarding. It's small town living. You have to have it.
Yeah.
If we don't have an ambulance in town, that's a real problem.
Yeah, that's a long ways.
Yes. I mean,
it's a long time to get
yes,
someone
absolutely.
Here from another place.
So, you know, that's part of being in town. You wear many hats.
Yeah.
You have to.
What, yeah, and what a fascinating way to give back in a small community, right?
Like, absolutely.
And know people.
We do about 120 to 140 calls a year.
Wow. Yeah.
So,
I imagine summertime is probably a little, you know,
oh, yes.
can get busy.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. yeah. So yeah. It's hopping, and it's got to be done.
It's fascinating. I love it. And what a cool thing. You know, Andrew and I have been talking about several other topics. Lansing, there's been a lot of kind of momentum here, I think, in the last few years of people working really hard to keep Lansing moving forward. Some really neat projects in your downtown, just community spaces, right? Things like that.
In my world, as far as being a historical person,
sure.
The slow evolution of buildings reverting back to their original design.
Oh, yeah.
To me, that's huge.
Yeah.
A lot of times, a lot of communities, you go to old river towns, that's the first thing you notice. And so that all compounds on itself and in a positive way. And so the more we do that, and the more owners are inspired to do that, mm-hmm. The better off we all are. People just remember small towns like Lansing.
Yeah.
And that's key.
And some of those projects are really big, right? Andrew, you were talking about there's been a facade project, right? Or maybe right. Marianne would talk about a facade project where business owners can actually apply for funds to help restore some of their actual business storefronts, right?
Yes.
That those are bigger projects for a lot of people. And some of the smaller projects, my buddy Stan and I were driving back through downtown last night, and here all the building tops were lit up with really nice lights following the top of each building. And that facade, as you're kind of driving down towards the river, is just a really beautiful shape. You know, it's a really neat, it's kind of like the bridge. You see it, and it's almost one of those things you could identify just from the silhouette itself, the outline. Mm-hmm. You know, you're like, hey, that's downtown Lansing. That's really right. Cool.
Man, no doubt.
Nice parts. Rick Welsh is here talking with us. I really appreciate your time and your insight to so many things. One of the things I do ask everybody as we work through these shows, there are a lot of different seasons here in rural Iowa. This last year has been a unique one, certainly. Do you have a favorite season yourself in Lansing? Is there a time of year you really like more than other?
Well, there's a non-working Rick, and then there's a working Rick.
That's exactly right.
during work, if it's business-oriented, any inclement weather for me is good. Mean, just as business-wise. Now, with that being said, I'm realistic, and I like to enjoy the outdoors. My wife and I, we have a pontoon, and I like to tell people that, and I don't think I'm totally wrong, but I probably have more miles on that river than anybody. At 3 miles an hour, and that's the most therapeutic thing you can have. It's a great decompression vehicle to just let things flow and dissipate. We love doing that. So anytime the weather's good, even if it's chilly, sometimes even raining, it's still worth it.
This is a question I haven't asked anyone yet. If you head out from wherever you keep your boat here at a dock, do you prefer to head upriver or downriver?
Well, upriver is the most popular, but downriver, if you stay in the channel, you're fine. But the evolution of the river over the last 5 years, the water's remained consistently at what they call pool level. Mm-hmm. And a lot of places south of the causeway from the bridge are choked off because they're too shallow. Mm-hmm. I like to travel that, but unless the river's at 9 foot stage,
That
doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So most of it's north.
Sure. Yeah. Well, water dependent makes sense.
Absolutely.
Big river. That's fun stuff. Somebody else mentioned to me newspaper clippings. Have you kept a lot of newspapers or newspaper clippings as part of your collection?
One of those things that you stumble upon and you don't realize the significance of it at the time. I was at an auction. I wasn't at an auction. I had an employee. I heard there was an auction in New Albany that had all these local newspapers from way back dating. And they just said many, many, many Alma Key journals. I thought, all right. So I couldn't get away from the business that day, so I had an employee go up there and tell me what they had, describe. He goes, oh, there's a lot of them here. You're going to need a forklift and a truck. And I said, well, have they, you know, let me know when they're getting to them. And as far as the auction goes, and got down to the auction, so I had him on the cell phone. Mm-hmm. And so I bought the whole entire collection for $10. Nobody else wanted them.
Well, my gosh.
Because there were so many, they weren't going to part them out. And you needed a warehouse for them. Well, what I found out was there's this collection was from 1928 to 2007. Pretty much every journal is accounted for.
Wow!
So I have them in my warehouse, and at times people ask, hey, I really like this article.
My goodness!
So I haven't archived them the best organization wise, but I'm working on it. And so it's one of those things that I really, really enjoy that.
Yeah.
I could get lost for hours out there.
Well, and as someone who my wife and I work in print media quite a bit still, and that is absolutely a love of my wife loves print media, but talk about a body of knowledge. Mm. That is
absolutely.
That's an incredible thing to have.
It's there. You just got to find it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I love it. That is a hoot. Okay, Rick, the last question I usually ask folks as we're on our way out, we've talked a little bit about this, maybe we've touched on it, but let's just say that you managed to get a day off, and I would imagine that those are far and few between for you in many ways. Let's say you got a day off. What's your perfect day off in Lansing?
They are very few and far between, but again, that's what you sign up for. That's what you do. My perfect day is getting up early. Getting in a 4-mile walk, which when the weather's conducive, I do that. Now, this is just weekdays. Now, this is what I do in the morning on weekdays. Awesome. I read for an hour after I get done with my walk, and that's my therapy during the week. If I had the whole day off, boy, that's I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
I would read and then just continue to drink my coffee and then probably head down the river. I mean, just it's so therapeutic. And there's no, I mean, yeah, you have your cell phone with you. If you need to be reached or whatever, you're not on call, that sort of thing, people can still get a hold of you. But life at 3 miles an hour on that river, there's nothing like it.
Life at 3 miles an hour. I mean, I feel like that should be
a bumper sticker.
That should be, yeah, there you go. That is. There's your next bumper sticker. Mr. Rick Welsh, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to be here. Owner of Welsh's Village Farm and Home, downtown Lansing, and many other parts of the community. Thanks for being here. Thanks for sharing part of your day with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Andrew, thanks for being here as well.
Pleasure.
We appreciate it. This is a series of shows we're calling Rhymes with Lansing. Companion podcast project of Inspired Media, bringing you stories from where Main Street meets the Mississippi, being recorded at the Works in downtown Lansing, Lansing Office Works. Check it out when you get a chance. Start planning your trip, lansingiowa.com. Thanks for being here. We'll see you on the next one. Rhymes with Lansing is being made possible by the generous support of the L. McKee Clayton Electric Cooperative and Dairyland Power. Find out more, acrec.com. Find out more about Lansing at lansingiowa.com. You can find out more about what we do at iloveinspired.com. Thanks for being here.